This is the Mixed Coach Podcast, episode 34. Today we're going to talk about recording choral music. But wait, before you turn it off, it's not just about choirs. It's about recording large ensembles. So stay tuned. I think you'll learn something.
Welcome to the Mixed Coach Podcast, the podcast dedicated to making your next recording your best recording.
Welcome to the Mixed Coach Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about choirs. John, I didn't realize this, but you actually studied choral music in
college. I did for a while there, and I've been in a bunch of different types of choirs. I've sang everything from, you know, Bach to Mozart to, you know, modern day stuff, you know, choral, like gospel, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, choirs are in pretty much every style of music. Everything from, you know, just rock albums, epic rock albums have choirs in there. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, gospel tracks mm-hmm. have choirs. And there's classical people that record choirs and that sort of thing. So because whenever they turn up, you know, people need to be ready for them, you know, engineers, that sort of thing. I would like to be more prepared. So from someone who's worked on choirs and a bunch of different styles of music, what do you do, you know, with choirs?
What do I do with choirs? Are you talking about recording? How do you record choirs?
Both,
how do you mix choirs?
I guess both. Let's go first for the recording, then flip it over to the mixing side.
Okay. Well, choirs can be overwhelming because whether you've got 12 people in it
right.
or 100 people, which I've recorded both, it can be a daunting task to think, I've got to get every one of these voices on tape or not tape
in pitch and everything
in my DAW
on the hard drive
I feel guilty calling it tape anymore, but it can be daunting. But I think if you go about it with a method, it can be doable and very doable. Some of the things you want to think about when you're recording choir is, you know, I keep talking about this pre-production, and it is so important.
Right. I feel like the more time that goes into pre-production, the better it's going to be in post-production.
Right.
So,
I just had this thought, literally fleeting thought. You know, everybody talks about how easy it is to record these days, and it is. Pro Tools is cheaper than it's ever been.
Right.
It's more powerful than it's ever been.
Right.
We've talked about plugins that you can buy. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple podcasts ago that are just incredible, that make our job so much easier. So
right.
really, literally, if you guys are, you know, wanting to be recording engineers and things like that, you've got a lot of competition.
Right.
Now, I'll just be honest with you. I've got a lot of competition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people think I'm crazy for getting on a podcast and honestly just answering any question I possibly can and telling you every ninja trick I've ever learned or anybody's ever taught me.
Oh, and there are many ninja tricks.
But I'll tell you what, I'm glad to teach you this stuff. I really am.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. This is, and I'm for you guys listening and really wanting to improve, where the pros are made is how much you are thinking ahead.
Right.
So, which translates in what we're talking about, pre-production. You have already thought about how many mics you need. You have already thought about what kind of pre's you're going to go through. You've already thought about how you're going to monitor everything. You look into the future almost. You know, a really good engineer almost always looks into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about the, I'd love to make a podcast on this right here, on this subject, but I won't right now. I'll go back to choir, which was your original question.
Right.
Okay, so pre-production is so important.
Right.
With choir. And I think a light bulb went off for me when I found this out. The big choirs that you hear, if you just stick two mics in front of a choir, it's going to sound like Luke Skywalker film. It's going to sound like something. It's going to sound like Star Wars. That,
yeah.
You know, those epic choirs in there?
Yeah.
Because they're not mic'd that close. They're mic'd in a big hall.
Yeah.
And at a moderate distance. So they have this wall of sound, this big...
Epic
sound.
Yeah.
But for a church choir, for a, you know, a gospel choir,
mm-hmm.
You don't want that epicness because... In the Luke Skywalker Star Wars film, all you're really getting, if you notice, are ahs and oohs and ahs.
All the vowels.
You're not getting any words, any consonants, any enunciation, you're getting the oohs and ahs. Mm-hmm. And that's because you can't understand what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Even if they were to sing something, especially if it were something fast, you'd never understand what they were saying. So here's a trick I learned that I thought was just beautiful. Guide vocals.
Nice.
Guide vocals. You take, before you go and record the choir, pre-production, that you're going in and you're recording the parts. Mm-hmm. And you're putting each one of those parts on a separate track so that you can literally mix the soprano hotter than the alto, hotter than the tenor. You can literally blend the guide tracks.
Nice.
And those guide tracks are used for two things. Pre-production wise, they're used to send to your choir members and say, this is your part. Because, you know, there's a couple kinds of choirs. The kind of choirs that stand there with a book in front of them who watch the conductor and read. And then there's the kind of choirs that I really, really like, which are the kind of choirs that just get up there and sing.
Yeah, they just feel
They feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've been to Christ Church, Christ Tab.
Yeah.
And you know what that choir is like when you hear them.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a chill on my arm just thinking about it. But those are the guys that get up there and sing. So those guys, even though some of them probably read music, most of them probably don't.
Mm-hmm.
So they need something to kind of help them learn their part.
Mm-hmm.
So sopranos, here is your mix
tape, yeah,
with a soprano part that we just recorded with the guide vocals, very hot. So you can learn that. And then you give that to each section.
Mm-hmm.
And then in post-production, what the guide vocals are used for is definition. Because if you mix it just right, you'll get the mass of the choir from using the 4 to 6 section mics. And then I usually come out a few feet and record another set of mics. And
yeah,
that's kind of more ambient. And then I'll usually record another set of stereo mics out maybe 15 to 20 feet, which gives you that whole Star Wars thing if you used it. So you blend it together to make it a great combination of epicness, the bigness of the choir that you want to hear,
mm-hmm,
and then the definition of the enunciation of the words come from the guide vocals.
Yeah.
So, and it is a dance. You have to constantly blend those. Well, you know,
right?
We mix the Christ Tab stuff together, and you have to constantly blend the definition of the guide vocals,
right,
that have served two purposes now: one for pre-production and one for post-production. And then the room mics, which, you know, give it the bigness and the epicness.
Right.
So,
a question that I was having with those guide vocals: how many people would you say you get in and you record those guide vocals with? How many people per section, I guess?
Well, I've seen it work with as little as 3.
Okay.
Literally, I mean, literally, yeah. I've seen it work very well with a tenor, a soprano, and an alto.
Nice.
So one from each section. If you're talking about SAT, and I hope we're not boring you guys with the choir stuff, but, you know, choir thing, it kind of gets in your blood.
Yeah.
You get one from each section, a soprano, an alto, a tenor.
Mm-hmm.
And the bass, you could probably get a bass singer, but you probably, you know, soprano's not going to be able to sing a bass line.
Right.
But what I typically do is you'll take the soprano, the alto, the tenor, and get them to sing one part. Now, you have to have good singers to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So you get everyone to sing the soprano part.
So the tenor and the alto are singing the soprano part.
Yeah, exactly. So okay, even the tenor is singing the soprano part.
Way up here.
So the soprano, yeah, the tenor, mm-hmm, is singing way out of his register.
Right.
And then the alto is singing a little bit out of her register. And then the soprano is at home.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you go down two, and then usually I'll stack that.
Okay, so you
sometimes
do that twice.
Sometimes two, sometimes three. It depends on how big you want it.
Okay.
It depends on really how many good singers you can get that can track these different parts like that.
Right.
So moving forward a little bit, when you get to the tenor part, mm-hmm, you got the tenor and he's in his powerhouse.
Yeah.
And then the alto's a little bit out of their register, and the soprano, I mean, she's like. So really, if you could soloed the soprano singing all three parts, she would sound like three different people.
Yeah.
Because of the three different registers she's singing at.
Right.
So the guide vocals, I've seen work with as little as 3 people. And you know what? I've seen it working as little as 2 people.
Excellent.
And you just need to stack it up a little bit more.
Yeah.
And, but I would say the sweet spot would be probably 5 or 6, 7 people.
Cool.
Depending on how big, because you can make that sound like a choir.
Oh, yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, you just stack it a couple times, mm-hmm, right? In fact, I heard a song you were doing the other day, and you said, how many people is that?
Yeah.
And I said, well, it sounds like about 20, 25 people, something like that. And you said, it's three. So it was one of those things. I was like, man, that's a great, great sounding choir. So,
it's a great trick to know.
Yeah.
And it not only works for choirs, it can work for, any kind of background vocal sort of thing. If you want defined parts in your background vocals,
yeah.
You know, get, well, let me say not, it takes a really good singer to span those three parts,
right,
and not cause more problems than you're solving.
Right.
So, but it'll work with several things.
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so in the mix, you just kind of ride those in and mix those, and that takes care of it.
Well, sometimes when you get to the guide vocals, mm-hmm. they're usually studio singers. They're right. usually have been in the studio before. Therefore, their pitch is usually really, really good. Mm-hmm. And if it's off, it's in a real sort of cool way that right. they're off. However, when you record the big choir, mm-hmm. you know, the 100 voice choir, choirs almost always sing flat.
Right.
Almost always. And according to my calculations and some brilliant people that I've worked with before, we've figured out that typically 10 cents is what they sing flat. So sometimes we'll go through in a choir and just with pitch and time.
Yeah, usually serato, that sort
yeah,
of thing.
Usually Melodyne doesn't work.
No.
But, you know, the waves, whatever their time shifter.
It's serato, pitch and time. And then there's waves.
You know, I'm going to sing a song while he looks it up. I'm just kidding. No, but Waves has a great one, and Serato has a great one.
Yeah.
And I think there's a couple more that I don't have that will do it. But just take it. And you know what? Even the pitch on Pro Tools,
not so much.
But it would work in a pinch, I think.
Yeah.
And sometimes it has worked better than pitch and time, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But take the whole choir and go up 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll do a playlist. Most of the time I'll playlist it.
Yeah.
And then the new playlist, I'll go up 10 cents. That way if I overshot it, undershot it, I can go back to that other playlist and
right.
pull it forward, and I'm good. But, yeah, typically a big choir will always sing flat. And so usually you'll correct those. But you can't go through and correct every bad note in the choir, but you can blanketly go in and pitch everybody up. I do right. that quite a bit.
Another thing to think about is you did some the other day. You were doing some retro style reverb things.
Oh yeah,
that was a really cool trick. I really loved it. And can you explain more about like reverb choices and if you're going for like kind of a retro choir sound, what you would do?
Well,
there?
Well, the retro choir thing was kind of like a one off thing.
Right.
I probably wouldn't even apply that as a general rule.
Right.
But I kind of wanted to go for a vibey thing . But I'll just tell you about the reverb choices, I guess, first.
Okay.
Typically, choirs are kind of ambient anyway because of the room you record them in.
Right.
If we're talking about a big choir. So typically, if I do that, I won't use a whole lot of reverb on the mm-hmm. choir because the room is a natural reverb.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to the recording of it, one of the coolest choir sounds I've ever gotten is where I recorded, I think it was 50 or 60 people. We had guide vocals. I recorded the choir in each section. So we had a soprano, alto, tenor, bass section. So I had four mics on the choir.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we stacked it. So we ended up with two. No, we didn't stack it. We did one pass. So it was 50 or 60 voices. And then I had you remember I told you a few minutes ago, we pulled out about maybe 5-6 feet.
Right.
Just somewhere to get a good stereo image of the choir. And mm-hmm. I think I recorded it with a stereo mic. I think maybe a Rode NT4. NT2, I can't remember which one
right.
I've got. NT5, it's the stereo Rode mic.
Right.
That mic is a great mic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cool thing that I did was I took two other mics, and I recorded it at an empty church, and the ceiling was vaulted.
Nice.
And the ceiling was wood.
Nice.
So I took
Even
two
better.
Mics, and I pointed them toward the ceiling.
Excellent.
So it was not picking up a direct signal
yeah,
from the
just,
choir at
just
all.
Ambient.
It was only picking up the room sound,
wow.
which was beautiful. I have to say, it's been several years since I've done that, but that was a beautiful sound. So by all means, if you're recording a choir and you've got a great sounding empty room or a great sounding room where it's kind of quiet,
right.
turn some mics around and pick it up that way. That's cool. To me, that's better than any reverb you could add.
Right, because it's real. Natural. Yeah,
yeah,
it's real.
But so I usually don't add a lot of reverb to a big choir. Now, to an ensemble or the guide vocals, if you're just going to use that as
like
the
major
choir,
background vocals,
yeah, sometimes I'll add, you know, nothing fancy. I don't do anything fancy with the reverbs, I don't think. Just, you know, I've got Altiverb and I've got a couple of halls sampled, so
right.
Sometimes I'll do that. Sometimes I'll put a EMT 250 plate or EMT 250 on it, like that. There's a preset on there about 2.3 seconds.
Great.
Sometimes that's plenty.
Yeah.
But you were asking about the retro thing.
Yeah, the retro choir.
Yeah, we were doing a Christmas song, which had one of those old 1950s choir ensembles.
Right.
You know, which didn't sound like a huge ensemble, maybe 15 or 20 people.
Right.
So they kind of sounded like carolers. Would you agree?
I would agree.
They kind of sounded like Christmas carolers. So I always, as I've mentioned 100 times, I always reference another mix, especially if we're covering a song. And this was Holly Jolly Christmas.
Yeah.
And you know what? Let's put a link to that song in the show notes, because by the time this comes out in a couple of weeks, it'll be released as a Christmas, and the guys can take a look at it. But it's called Holly Jolly Christmas. It was a Burl Ives song back in the 50s or 60s. And the choir took the middle section. It was Have a Holly Jolly Christmas. And I'm sure some of you guys have heard it. But listen to that song, the original. The choir was on the left, and all the reverb was on the right.
Yeah.
I told you the other day, it was back when stereo had first come out and nobody knew what to do with it.
Yeah.
Before anybody realized that, hey, maybe we should use two mics.
Right.
So they were doing things like using the choir and panning it hard left, and then the reverb on the
reverb on the
and
other
I guess
side.
I don't know, that was just kind of one of those things that endeared me to that song.
Yeah.
So I wanted to duplicate that.
Yeah.
So I did that. I just took the choir and panned them not hard left, but I panned them a little bit left.
Yeah.
And then I took the reverb and I panned it a little bit right. So you kind of got that old feel.
Yeah.
You know, when you listen to it. But that's one thing. I would not say, you know, every time you record a choir, do that. I would not say that.
No, not at all.
But if you're looking for an old retro sound, I would say you should give it a try because it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah. It's a cool effect. So,
did you have any more?
I think that pretty much covers choirs from where I sit. So,
well, I'd love to hear you guys. I would love to hear some experiences you've had with choirs. Maybe if you're thinking about recording your church choir or recording a large ensemble or something like that. Chime in on the website, and maybe we can give you some tips and tricks, okay? But I want to thank you guys again for tuning in, and I will see you in a couple weeks. Bye.
For a free download of Kevin's video called 5 Things Every Great Mixer Knows, head over to mixcoach.com/freetips.